Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jana Bala Bajri Vardhari Gopi Jana Bala Bajri Vardhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Bala Bhagri Vardhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Bala Bhagri Vardhari Gopi Jana Bala Bhagri Vardhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I go to Haribol. Nit I go to Haribol, 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 Haribol. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Jagannath, Jagannath, Baladev Subhadra. Jaya Om Vishnupad, Pranamamsa Pradabharaja Kacharya Rastatara Sadasu Sri Man is Divine Grace Sesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Nichali la pravistaram Vishnu pad chila bhakti siddhanta saraswati goswami Prabhupada ki jai. Anantakota Vaishnava vrinda ki jai. Namachari haridas thakur ki jai. Prem Seko Hosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sudvaita Gadadha Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindakida Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Sri Mathura Dham Ki Jai Sri Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Sri Purushottama Chetra Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai, Jamuna Mai Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Sri Jagannath Swami Ki Jai, Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, Gaura Premanandi. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vasakan Vitam Scha Namarom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvisesya Sunyavadi Paschachade Shatarne Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri
Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra, Jaya Gaura Bhakta
Vrinda.
So, today's the beginning of your Rathiatra preparations. The countdown to the Lord's appearance on his transcendental chariot. Actually, we just had Snani Yatra in Mayapur, at Rajpur there, where the Jagannath Mandir is. We had just on a month ago. So I just feel very fortunate that I arrived here just in time for your Snani Yatra as well. Very nice. Lord Jagannath's mercy. So reading from chapter 12 of the Madhyalila, the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. So I'll read a little something, and then there's a few things we'll talk about Srila Prabhupada's pastimes, and some cleansing of the temples, and other things. So in the summary then, in his Amrita Prabhava Bhasya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur summarizes this chapter as follows. The king of Orissa, Maharaj Prataparudra, tried his best to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Nityananda Prabhu and other devotees informed the Lord about the king's desire, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not agree to see him. At that time, Sri Nityananda Prabhu devised a plan, and he sent a piece of the Lord's outward garment to the king. The next day, when Ramananda Roy again entreated Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to see the king, the Lord, denying the request, asked Ramananda Roy to bring the king's son before him. The prince visited the Lord like a Vaishnava, and this awakened remembrance of Krishna. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delivered the son of Maharaj Prataparudra. After this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu washed the Gundicha temple before the Rathiatra took place. He then took his bath at Indradumna Lake and partook of prasadam in the garden nearby. While Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu washed the temple of Gundicha, a Gaudiya Vaishnava washed the lotus feet of the Lord and drank the water. This incident is very significant, for it awoke within that devotee ecstatic love. Then the son of Advaita Prabhu, named Gopal, fainted during kirtan, and when he did not come to his senses, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu favoured him by awakening him. There was also some humorous talk between Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Prabhu during prasadam. Advaita Prabhu said that Nityananda Prabhu was unknown to anyone, and that it was not the duty of a householder brahmana to accept dinner with a person unknown in society. In answer to this humorous statement, Sri Nityananda Prabhu replied that Advaita Acharya was a monist, and that he could not know how his mind could be turned by eating with such an impersonalist. The conversation of these two Prabhus, Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Prabhu, carried a deep meaning that only an intelligent man can understand. After all the Vaishnavas finished their luncheon, Swarup Damodara and others took their prasadam within the room. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took great pleasure when he saw the Jagannath deity after the period of the deity's retirement. At that time, Lord Chaitanya was accompanied by all the devotees, and all of them were very pleased. So that's the summary. We'll read a little something. And as I say, we'll try and pick up a few of Srila Prabhupada's pastimes as well. So I won't read the Bengali. I'll just read the English verses. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu washed and cleansed the Gaudiya temple with his devotees and associates. In this way, he made it as cool and bright as his own heart. And thus he made a temple befitting a befitting place for Lord Sri Krishna to sit. All glories to Gaurachandra, all glories to Nityananda, all glories to Advaita Chandra, and all glories to the devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, headed by Sri Vasa Thakur. I beg their power so that I can properly describe Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned from his South Indian tour, Maharaj Prataparudra, the king of Orissa, became very anxious to meet him. The king sent a letter from his capital, Cuttack, to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, entreating him to obtain the Lord's permission so that he could go and see him. Replying to the king's letter, the Bhattacharya wrote that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had not given his permission. After this, the king wrote him another letter. In this letter, the king requested Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, please appeal to all the devotees associated with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and submit this petition to them on my behalf. If all the devotees associated with the Lord are favorably disposed towards me, they can submit my petition at the lotus feet of the Lord. By the mercy of all the devotees, one can attain the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Without his mercy, my kingdom does not appeal to me. If Gaurahari, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, will not show mercy to me, I shall give up my kingdom, become a mendicant, and beg from door to door. When the Bhattacharya received this letter, he became very anxious. He then took the letter and went to the devotees of the Lord. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya met with all the devotees and described the king's wishes. Then he presented the letter to all of them for inspection. Upon reading the letter, everyone was astonished to see that the King Prataparudra had so much devotion for the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The devotees gave their opinion and said, the Lord will never meet the king, and if we request him to do so, the Lord will surely feel very unhappy. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then said, we shall go up once again to the Lord, but we shall not request him to meet the king. Rather, we shall simply describe the good behavior of the king. Having thus reached a decision, they all went to the place of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There, although ready to speak, they could not utter even a word. After they arrived at Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's place, the Lord, seeing them, said, what have you all come here to say? I see that you want to say something, but you do not speak. What is the reason? Nityananda Prabhu then said, well, we want to tell you something. Although we cannot stay without speaking, we are still very much afraid to speak. We want to submit before you something that may or not be fitting. The matter is this, unless he sees you, the king of Orissa will become a mendicant. Nityananda Prabhu continued, the king has decided to become a mendicant and accept the sign of a mendicant by wearing an ivory earring. He does not want to enjoy his kingdom without seeing the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nityananda Prabhu continued, the king also expressed his desire to see the moon-like face of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his eyes' full satisfaction. He would like to raise the lotus feet of the Lord to his heart. Hearing all these statements, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mind was certainly softened, but externally he wished to speak some harsh words. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I can understand that you all desire to take me to Cuttack to see the king. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, what to speak of spiritual advancement? All the people will blaspheme me. And what to speak of all the people? Damodar will chastise me. I shall not meet the king at the request of all the devotees, but I shall do so if Damodar will give his permission. Damodar immediately replied, my lord, you are the fully independent Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since everything is known to you, you know what is permissible and what is not permissible. I am merely an insignificant jiva, so what power do I have to give directions to you? By your own personal choice, you will meet with the king. I shall see it. The king is very much attached to you, and you are feeling affection and love towards him. Thus I can understand that by virtue of the king's affection for you, you will touch him. Although you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and are completely independent, still you are dependent on the love and affection of your devotees. That is your nature. Nityananda Prabhu then said, Who is there in the three worlds who can ask you to see the king? Still, isn't it the nature of an attached man to give up his life if he does not obtain his desired object? For instance, some of the wives of the brahmanas who were performing sacrifices gave up their lives in the presence of their husbands for the sake of Krishna. Nityananda Prabhu then submitted one suggestion for the Lord's consideration. There is a way, he suggested, by which you need not meet the king, but which would enable the king to continue living. If you, out of your mercy, send one of your outer garments to the king would live, hoping to see you sometime in the future. The Lord said, since you are all very learned personalities, whatever you decide, I shall accept. Lord Nityananda Prabhu then obtained an external garment used by the Lord by requesting it from Govinda. Thus Nityananda Prabhu delivered the old cloth to the care of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya sent it to the king. When the king received the old cloth, he began to worship it exactly as he would worship the Lord personally. I have a little pastime that I had personally with Srila Prabhupada in connection with this, actually. I have on my altar one of Prabhupada's teeth, which I was fortunate to obtain in August in 1976. Prabhupada had just come back to India when we were in Bombay, and the following morning I went into Prabhupada's room, and he smiled, and when he smiled I saw that he had a gap in his mouth that he didn't have the night before. So I was very shocked and surprised. So I said, Srila Prabhupada, what happened to your tooth? So Prabhupada didn't say anything. He just reached down and he pulled open the drawer of his desk. And lying in the drawer was his tooth. So somehow or another in the middle of the night when Prabhupada was doing his translation work, this tooth had either fallen out or he'd pulled it out. Actually, a month or so before, when we were in Toronto, he had had very severe toothache and his face was, you know, badly swollen. So maybe it was the same tooth, I don't know. But anyway, this tooth was lying in the drawer there. So then at that point, I was faced with a dilemma, because I knew that any second Prabhupada's going to, if I don't say something, Prabhupada's going to shut the drawer and the tooth is going to disappear back into the bowels of the desk there, and that will be it. Then it may just lie there, you know, will go off somewhere, and who knows what will happen to that tooth. And at the same time, you know, I was also thinking that, wow, it would be really nice to have that tooth. So what went through my mind was this incident here with King Prataparudra, that he had got that cloth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he was worshipping him. It was as good as worshipping the Lord himself. So I was thinking that at some point I'm not going to be personally serving Srila Prabhupada anymore. So if I had that tooth, then I could continue my service. But at the same time, it was a dilemma because we had, right from the time that I joined Prabhupada's party, I've been very strictly instructed by Hari Kesh Prabhu that you are here to serve Srila Prabhupada, so you can never ask the spiritual master for anything. That was a standing rule. You never ask your guru for anything, but you're there to give something. So that was, you know, in my mind that, well, here's this tooth. It would be very nice to have it. I could continue my worship and service to Srila Prabhupada if I had it in the future. But then, you know, I can't ask because we're not supposed to ask Prabhupada for anything. And this was all happening like within a second because, you know, Prabhupada wasn't going to sit there eternally with his desk drawer open with the tooth lying in it. So then I had to make a snap decision. So I just thought, well, you know, I'm going to ask. That's it. So I asked Srila Prabhupada, well, do you think I could have that tooth? So Prabhupada smiled and he picked it up and he dropped it in my hand. So I have that tooth still and I'm still worshipping it. I have a little duty of Prabhupada. So it just brought me to mind that incident there. That was, I got my inspiration from Maharaj Prataparudra. So, after returning from his service in South India, Ramananda Roy requested the king to allow him to remain with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Ramananda Roy requested the king to allow him to stay with the Lord, the king immediately gave him permission with great satisfaction. As for the king himself, he began to solicit Ramananda Roy to make a meeting arrangement. The king told Ramananda Roy, "Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very, very merciful to you. Therefore, please solicit my meeting with him without fail." The king and Ramananda Roy returned together to Jagannath Puri, and Sri Ramananda Roy met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. At that time, Ramananda Roy informed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the ecstatic love of the king. Indeed, as soon as there was some opportunity, he repeatedly informed the Lord about the king. Sri Ramananda Roy was indeed a diplomatic minister for the king. His general behavior was very expert, and simply by describing the king's love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gradually softened the Lord's mind. Maharaj Prataparudra, in great anxiety, could not endure not meeting the Lord, and therefore Sri Ramananda Roy, by his diplomacy, arranged a meeting with the Lord for the king. Sri Ramananda Roy frankly requested Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Please show your lotus feet to the king at least once." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "My dear Ramananda, you should make this request after duly considering whether it is befitting for a sannyasi to meet with a king. If a mendicant meets a king, this world and the next world are both destroyed for that mendicant. Indeed, what is there to say of the next world? In this world, people will joke if a sannyasi meets with a king." Ramananda Roy replied, "My lord, you are the supreme independent personality. You have nothing to fear from anyone because you are not dependent on anyone." When Ramananda Roy addressed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the supreme personality of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu objected, saying, "I am not the supreme personality of Godhead, but an ordinary human being. Therefore, I must fear public opinion in three ways, with my body, mind, and words. As soon as the general public finds a little fault in the behavior of a sannyasi, they advertise it like wildfire. A black spot of ink cannot be hidden on a white cloth. It is always very prominent." Ramananda Roy replied, "My dear Lord, you have delivered so many sinful people. This King Prataparudra of the King of Orissa is actually a servitor of the Lord and your devotee." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, "There may be much milk in a big pot, but if it is contaminated by a drop of liquor, it is untouchable. The king certainly possesses all good qualities, but simply by taking up the name king, he has infected everything. But if you are still very eager for the king to meet with me, please first bring his son to meet me. It is indicated in the revealed scriptures that the son represents the father. Therefore, the son's meeting with me will be just as good as if the king, as the king's meeting with me. Ramananda Roy then went to inform the king about his talks with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and following the Lord's orders, brought the king's son to see him. The prince, just entering upon his youth, was very beautiful. He was blackish in complexion and had large lotus eyes. The prince was dressed in yellow cloth, and there were jeweled ornaments decorating his body. Therefore, anyone who saw him would remember Lord Krishna. Seeing the boy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately remembered Krishna. Meeting the boy in ecstatic love, the Lord began to speak. "Here is a great devotee," Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. "Upon seeing him, everyone can remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "I have become very much obligated just by seeing this boy." After saying this, the Lord again embraced the prince. As soon as the prince was touched by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the symptoms of ecstatic love immediately manifested themselves upon his body. These symptoms included perspiration, trembling, tears, being stunned, and jubilation. The boy began to cry and dance, and he chanted, "Krishna, Krishna." Upon seeing his bodily symptoms and his chanting and dancing, all the devotees praised him for his great spiritual fortune. At that time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu calmed the youth and ordered him to come there daily to meet with him. Ramananda Roy and the boy then departed from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Ramananda took him back to the king's palace. The king was very happy when he heard of his son's activities. Just by embracing his son, the king was filled with ecstatic love, just as if he had touched Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly. From then on, the fortunate prince was one of the most intimate devotees of the Lord. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu acted in the society of his pure devotees, performing his pastimes and spreading the Sankirtan movement. Some of the prominent devotees, like Advaita Acharya, used to invite Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to take meals at their homes. The Lord accepted such invitations accompanied by his devotees. So in this way, the Lord passed some days in great jubilation. And then the car festival of Lord Jagannath approached. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first of all called for Kashi Misra, and then for the superintendent of the temple, and then for Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. When these three people came before the Lord, he begged them for permission to wash the temple known as Gundicha. Upon hearing the Lord's request for permission to wash the Gundicha temple, the Padicha, the superintendent of the temple, said, "My dear sir, we are all your servants. Whatever you desire is our duty to perform." The king gave a special order for me to do without delay whatever your lordship desires. "My dear lord, washing the temple is not service befitting you. Nonetheless, if you wish to do it, it is to be accepted as one of your pastimes. To wash the temple, you need many water pots and brooms. Therefore, order me. I can immediately bring all these things to you." As soon as the superintendent understood the desire of the Lord, he immediately delivered 100 new water pots and 100 brooms for sweeping the temple. So, I'm going to leave the rest of this chapter for other people to read. But cleaning the temple and cleanliness is a very important part of the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, the Supreme Lord is pure. And as it said, unless one is also pure, then you cannot approach Krishna. One has to be on the same platform as the Supreme Lord, Sudasattva. So, in order for us to become fit to, as it's mentioned there, receive the Lord within our hearts, to seat Krishna within our hearts have to be very clean. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada was very attentive in the matter of cleanliness and in training his devotees how to be clean. So that was one of the first things that I learned when I had the fortune to join Srila Prabhupada's party. We were in Delhi in 1975 in November, at the end of November. And somehow or another I was asked to start doing some personal service for Srila Prabhupada. So I remember on the first night that I went into Prabhupada's room. He was having a darshan. And then Hari Kesha had cooked something for him. So Prabhupada took a little prasadam. And there was one man that came and he had a basket of fruit that he had presented to Srila Prabhupada as a gift. So rather than take the fruit himself, Prabhupada decided that the fruit should be sent to the temple and offered to the deities. So about 9 o'clock in the evening, Prabhupada called me over and he said, so he'd just finished eating. He said, now you take this plate and wash it and this fruit should be taken to the temple and offered to the deity. So I was feeling really privileged. It was the first time in my whole life that I'd been in Prabhupada's room, you know, kind of late at night. So I was already kind of very, you know, excited about being there. And then when Prabhupada asked me to do this service, I was really, you know, happy. So immediately I picked up Prabhupada's plate and with one hand, and then I picked up the basket of fruit with the other, and I started for the door. Prabhupada stopped me straight away. He said, what is this? He said, the plate I've just been eating, it's contaminated, and you're picking it up, and now you're picking up the fruit, which has to be offered to the deity. Then he shook his head. He said, go and wash. So I was thinking, you know, by picking up Srila Prabhupada's plate, that I was becoming purified. Prabhupada had eaten from that plate, and I was picking it up, so that was purifying me. But of course, from Prabhupada's point of view, it was contaminated. And he wanted to offer that fruit to the deity, so he couldn't tolerate having me, you know, pick up his contaminated plate and the fruit, thus contaminating the fruit as well. So that was my first lesson in cleanliness, personal lesson from Srila Prabhupada. Then later on, I think probably a day or 2 days later, I had another similar incident. Prabhupada, again, he asked me to clear his plate. And he wanted some water pouring from a pot. So I did the same mistake. I picked up the plate and then I picked up the pot. And then again, Prabhupada chastised me. He said, why don't you learn these things? You know, you have to know what cleanliness is. And then during the daytime, I'd kind of figured out how to sneak into Prabhupada's quarters. Hari Kesha actually was very strict. He was the cook. And I had only been taken on as Prabhupada's Masur, just temporarily. It was supposed to be for 2 or 3 days. And so Hari Kesha was like letting me in to Prabhupada's quarters just in time for the massage. And then at the end of the massage, I was supposed to leave again and then not come back until darshan time. But because Hari Kesha was busy cooking, I kind of hung around and he was too busy to kick me out. So Prabhupada would take his bath after having his massage, and then he would sit in his lounge and wait for his prasadam. So then Hari Kesha kind of softened and he allowed me to help serve out. So I served Srila Prabhupada out, and then whilst Prabhupada was eating, I went in the back room, and Hansaduda had just come on as the secretary at that time. So Hari Kesha and Hansaduda were there, and they were sharing, you know, the remains of what had been cooked. So I had my bowl. So I sat there and I was eating with them. So then Srila Prabhupada, he came out from his darshan room. He'd already finished. And he was going into his bedroom to take rest. And he had to come through the room that the servants were in. So when he came through, we immediately stopped eating and we bowed down and offered our obeisances. That was our habit. Whenever we saw Srila Prabhupada, we would immediately offer our obeisances, either by, you know, us coming into his room and seeing him, or by Prabhupada coming into, you know, our presence. But you immediately offered your obeisances, going in and going out. So we offered our obeisances, and then I sat back on my heels, kneeling. So as I did so, I put my hands on my knees, and Prabhupada looked at me. And he said, what is this? He said, you're all malechus. He said, you're eating, and then? And he starts touching his shirt, like, you know, small children sometimes when they eat. And then they, you know, they stick it on their heads and in their ears and on their shirts, and they have no concept. So Prabhupada laughed. And it did occur to me I was eating with a spoon. So I was thinking, my hand's not dirty. And I nearly said it, but Prabhupada, I'm eating with a spoon. And I thought, no, Prabhupada can see that I'm eating with a spoon. And obviously, he has just a much higher standard of cleanliness. So, you know, just eating with a spoon, you're not supposed to touch anything else. You immediately, after eating, you go and wash. So that was another little incident that I learned from. Then a little bit later, that was in November, in early January, we went down to South India. We had a couple of days in Madras, and then we went to a place called Nellore. So when we arrived at this house that we were to stay at, it was owned by a couple of sisters, and they were donating some land. They had two plots of land, and they had a house on one, and the other plot of land was vacant, and that was where we were going to build our temple. So when we moved into this room that they prepared for Srila Prabhupada, then I went into the kitchen to prepare his breakfast. Prabhupada used to take mainly just different kinds of fruit, sometimes some muri or puffed rice, maybe half a sandesh, and some fried cashew nuts. That was the basic breakfast prasadam. So I'd gone in there, and then I couldn't find any salt. And Prabhupada liked salt. So then I asked, and then they showed me this big block of this, you know, kind of crystallized salt. So I had to pound it, break it up and pound it down so that it could be used. So it took me, you know, quite a while. So I was thinking, you know, well, I don't want to do this every day. So I thought I'll, you know, make a whole batch of it and I'll put it in a pot and then I'll keep that in Prabhupada's room and he can just, you know, take it as he needs it. And that will save me having to do it every morning. So I spent half an hour and I basted up this salt, and so it was finely ground, and then I put it on Prabhupada's chonky. So then Prabhupada took breakfast. So when he was eating, then he was taking pieces of fruit, and instead of taking the salt, some salt, putting it on his plate, he was taking the pieces of fruit and he was dipping it into the salt pot and then eating. So at the end, I cleared Prabhupada's plate away. And I left the salt pot on the chonky. And I was thinking, well, I'll just leave it there for the rest of the meals. So by that time, Prabhupada was sitting at his desk. He was talking with Isodhananda. And Chutananda was there and a couple of others, I think Mahamsa. And he was chatting with them. And as he was talking with them, he was watching me with his other eye. And he saw me clear the plate and leave the salt pot. So immediately he caught me. He said, "What is this?" He said, "You Yavana." He said, "It's been eaten from, and now you're leaving it?" So I was really embarrassed. I couldn't say anything. So then Hari Kesh kind of, you know, he had understood what I was trying to do. And so he said, well, he left the salt pot there, you know, for future use. Is it all right if he leaves it like that, Prabhupada? I said, "I don't know whether it's all right or not, but it's not all right that once it's been used, that it can be left. So, you know, take it away." So he said, "Anything that's been eaten from once, that's it. You cannot use it again." He said, "That's your Western habit. Anything stale and used, no vitamins, no nourishment, but still you eat." So he made me clear it away. So that was another little prasadam incident there. Then later on we were in Mayapur in March, and Prabhupada had taken his lunch prasadam and he was sitting on the balcony just at the western end of the Lotus building. In those days there was only that one building. The long building wasn't there. There was just that Lotus building in the middle, the original guest house with the deities below, and the front wall. So Prabhupada liked to come out after his prasadam and he would sit and look out over the fields across to the Ganges. So myself and Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who would come on as the secretary at that time, you know, we kind of took the opportunity to just go and sit there with Srila Prabhupada on the balcony. It was really sweet. So Prabhupada, he was sitting and I had brought out a glass of water for him just in case he wanted a drink. So sure enough, he pointed to his glass and, you know, give me some water. So in my eagerness to give him the glass, I moved too fast and I caught the edge of his glass with the palm of my hand, and it started to tip. So I moved quick and I just caught it, and I got my finger, just the tip of my finger went over the edge of the cup and just touched the water. So Prabhupada's watching me, he's not saying anything. And then I had another dilemma that now I've touched the water, what do I do? You know, Prabhupada wants a drink. Now if I, you know, throw the water away and I have to go and get more water, it was at the other end of the of the building, so then it will make Prabhupada have to wait. So should I inconvenience him, or, you know, should I just offer him the water anyway, even though I'd touched it? So I just, you know, took a gamble and I offered the cup. As soon as I did that, Prabhupada shook his head. He said, "You malacha." And he quoted that verse, Pravittim cha navrittim cha janana vidurasura. He said, the asuras, they do not know what is cleanliness. He said, this is the problem. He said, you'll never learn. So later on, I was in Prabhupada's room, I was thinking about it, and I said, well, you know, I'm trying. Actually, by that time, I'd started bathing 3 times a day, because I discovered that, you know, bathing once in the morning wasn't sufficient, because I did Prabhupada's massage at about 11:30, and by that time, you know, we'd been running around a bit, you were sweating a little bit, and then as soon as I started massaging Srila Prabhupada, I would, you know, break out into a sweat. So, to avoid that, then I was taking a bath just before I did the massage, and then, of course, again, we'd take another bath in the evening. So, I was trying to learn, you know, and improve my standards, but it was difficult, and Prabhupada was always catching me on these different points. And so I was in his room, and I was talking to him about it, and I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, I know what the standard's supposed to be, but it doesn't come naturally. I said, it's very difficult, you know. And I explained to him that the background that I came from, England, nobody ever bathes. You know, we used to bathe once a week. That was it. You know, Friday night was bath night in my house. So I said, you know, it just doesn't come naturally. So Prabhupada laughed. He said, anyway, he said, you just practice. He said, I know, he said, for you Westerners, he said, cleanliness is artificial. But he said, you have to practice it, and then it will come. So anyway, then whilst we were there in Mayapur, there was another incident which was very important. It was very instructive, actually, because the whole point about cleanliness is being made here in this chapter about cleansing the heart and being fit for the service of the Lord. And what's in the heart is reflected in our activities. And similarly, the condition of the heart can also be affected by our activities. So in other words, if you're pure, then the situation that you create around you will also become purified. And alternatively, if you're not pure, but if you practice cleanliness, if you practice cleaning, then that will have an effect on your heart internally. So the two are linked together, the internal and the external. So there was a very important incident, actually, that happened in Mayapur just on that same visit, when Prabhupada was out on an inspection. He used to walk around the grounds and he would look and see how things were going on. So there's a couple of things here that I'd written down that are in my diary. So this was on January the 18th. We'd just arrived in Mayapur the day before. And Prabhupada took his first morning walk. So he went on this tour. So he went and he inspected the kitchen area, a separate building with accommodations for householders on the upper floor. So that now is, those of you that have been to Mayapur, there's that big kitchen. When you go in the entrance, it's on the far right. And next to that, there was another building, which was being used at that time as a kitchen. So Prabhupada was not pleased to see dirt on the steps. He said they looked like they had not been cleaned for 300 years. And he demanded to know why. When told that the place was cleaned every night, he retorted, "What is the use of such cleaning if it's dirty the next morning?" One of the managers said that it was difficult to get the devotees to clean in the early morning because they all wanted to complete their japa. Prabhupada, however, said that cleaning must come first and the chanting of japa another time. He stressed that unless they are prepared to work, nobody should be allowed to join us. Sri Vigrahara Dhananichanana Sringaratan Mandira Majanado. This is all temple, he said. This is not an ordinary hotel, free hotel. If they cannot take care as temple, they must go away. Simply eating and sleeping, that's all, not working. See that they do not make it a free hotel for eating and sleeping. Do not allow this. It should be clean. Why in the evening? Every morning it should be cleaned and washed and mopped up. They must give up their japa. First of all, clean. In the name of japa, they are dozing and everything is unclean. This nonsense should not be allowed. Ask them, stop japping. First of all, clean, and then make japa. Under the plea of japa, they are simply dozing, he said. You should not give shelter to persons who, in the name of so-called japa, take advantage of free board and lodge. You should be very careful. Everyone should be, according to his capacity, engaged to some work. Do not allow this stupidity. So that was a little incident, but then, a few days later, on March the 4th, Prabhupada was out walking again. So, Prabhupada got out of his car and he decided to walk down towards the Prasadam Hall. At the end of the line of the boundary wall, opposite the southern gate, he stopped to inspect a circular-shaped toilet block. So this was meant to provide basic amenities for the families occupying the rooms on the front wall. That was situated just where Prabhupada's Samadhi is now. So there was like a circular block there. On the outside there were toilets, and on the inside there was taps and washing facilities. So Prabhupada was repulsed by what he saw. Human feces lay strewn on the outer pathway. Poking open several of the doors with his cane, he saw that each and every toilet was completely blocked with stool and overflowing. Srila Prabhupada was shocked. He couldn't believe that the maintenance of the block was so neglected. He demanded to know who was responsible. One devotee explained that the newer Bengali devotees were simple village people, unaccustomed to flushing toilets. He said that the Western devotees never used this block. Prabhupada rejected the excuse. He was disgusted. I could understand if they, these villagers, do not react to this, because they are used to passing stool in the fields. But you Westerners, you are not trained in such a way. How our Western men can allow this situation without doing anything about it? He called the managers and he told them to immediately have the toilets fixed and cleansed. After entering the temple and greeting the deities, receiving Guru Puja, Prabhupada gave his Bhagavatam class. The verse expressed Prahlad Maharaj's feelings of humility, and he described himself as born in a family infected with the hellish qualities of passion and ignorance. It was a wonder to Prahlad that Lord Nrisimhadeva had touched him personally on his head, even though such a favor had never been extended to great personalities like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even Lakshmi, the Lord's eternal consort. So the toilet incident was still in Prabhupada's mind. He often draws upon real-life incidents and presents them in a more refined philosophical way in class. But today, without delay, he directly complained about what he had seen. He spelled out the serious implications very clearly. Prabhupada took full advantage of the description in this verse to express his disapproval of our inaction in the face of a gross display of ignorance. This is the position. Prahlad Maharaj humbly submitting, because he's a Vaishnav, that what is my position? My position is that I'm born of Rajas Tamagun. So this birth takes place according to the quality that we acquire. Just like I was rebuking that toilet. This is so nasty, Tamagun. And if I have no response to such Tamagun place, that means I am also of the same quality. Just like between fire and fire, there's no reaction. But fire and water, there is reaction. So similarly, Satwagun and Satwagun, no reaction. Tamagun, tamagun, no reaction. In English, it is called incompatible when different qualities mix. Acid and acid, you can mix, there's no reaction. But acid and alkaline, if you mix, there will be effervescence immediately. So, if one is developing tamagun, then if he becomes a pig in the next life, there's no reaction. He'll be very glad. Oh, I am pig. I am dog. So there's no reaction. But if one is in satwagun, then he cannot tolerate. Simply obnoxious. Immediately obnoxious. Oh, such a nasty condition. So I am very sorry that there was no reaction to such a nasty toilet room. And you were getting the sacred thread, the quality of brahmana, satwagun. It is very regrettable. Nobody reacted. So this is the position, that unless we curb down this rajagun, tamagun, there is no improvement. If a person in Krishna consciousness is found to have no reaction in rajagun and tamagun, then he is a dull stone. It is not improving. It is simply show bottle, and show bottle will not help. So this prescription is there. If one develops Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood that he has surpassed the satwagun, the brahminical qualification. So why we offer sacred thread to a person who is coming from a very, very low family? Because it is to be understood by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, by following the regulative principle, he has already come to the platform of satwagun. But if it is a false thing, then there is no need of second initiation. Our process is, don't do this, do this. Chant the Hare Krishna mantra 16 rounds, and don't do this. No illicit sex, no meat eating. That means he's becoming purified from the rotten condition of rajagun and tamagun. But if he does not, then there should be no second initiation. This should be the rule. So Prabhupada's criticism had its effect. By mid-morning, the whole block was thoroughly cleansed and disinfected, and the managers made a vow to keep it that way. Very important. Now Prabhupada drew that parallel that this external condition, because nobody reacted to it, means you're not Brahmins. You've taken the sacred thread, but you see something in tamagun and you don't react. So what does that mean? It means you're of the same quality. Oh, it's normal. Don't do anything. And there were other times when Prabhupada chastised us. You know, sometimes something would be dirty in the temple, in the courtyard, on the pathway outside, or other buildings. And then Prabhupada would comment, why this is dirty? Or somebody would say, well, the cleaners haven't cleaned it. Prabhupada would say, why the cleaners? You're all the cleaners. If this is Krishna's temple. Everything is Krishna's temple. Nothing is different from Krishna. There was another incident. He said, don't think that just, oh, the deities have to be kept nice, but then the temple area, it can be neglected. Everything is Krishna. It's not different. The temple is also Krishna. So it also has to be kept clean. And he said it is not the duty of just, you know, the cleaner. It's the duty of everybody. They have that consciousness. Seeing everything connected with Krishna, then they must keep it clean. So a devotee can't tolerate seeing litter or dirt here and there and everywhere. And there was actually a nice incident. Is Vishal Prabhu still here? He's not here. He's gone out. But there was an incident with Vishal. Are you there? All right, you might you might remember this one. This was December the 3rd, 1975, in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada was going out on his morning walk. And as he strode out of the front gate this morning, Vishal Prabhu was emulating the Vedic Brahmanas by chanting some verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam in praise of Srila Prabhupada. We think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence, he started, gripping the spiral tapered walking stick that Vishal himself had given him for this year's Vyasa Puja gift. Prabhupada poked its silver tip at some puddles in the temple entranceway, and he interrupted him caustically. It is the grace of providence. You do not see that it is properly cleansed? Unexpectedly cut short and somewhat taken aback, Vishal stammered apologetically. I'm sorry. I'll see to that, your divine grace. That is my fault. Prabhupada remained deadpan. Why there is water? This water means shoes, dirt. Then it will be dirty. So you have no eyes to see? I'm blind. I'm sorry. I'll see that it is cleansed for you. Then become with eyes. Simply praying, what will you do? Do something practical. Leaving Vishal agape, he strode strongly off down the road with his amused disciples following. You remember that one? So Prabhupada was, he had eyes like a hawk. A little pool of water. Why is that there? That means then people, they'll wear their shoes, it will be dirty, and then they'll paddle it into the temple room. So actually, the standard in those days in Vrindavan was that Prabhupada had us clean the temple 3 times a day. We had to clean it immediately after Mangalati. And people come in, because you have dust on your feet, etc. So then we'd send everybody out, and then we'd run up and down with the squeegees, throw water everywhere, and clean the whole temple and the courtyard. But before that, we would do the walkways down the sides of the temple, because I was the temple commander at that time. I knew that Prabhupada, you know, he would come out at dawn for his morning walk. So the first thing he would do, he would look and see if the walkways were clean. So we would run out and, you know, throw water around and then run over it with the squeegees. And, you know, by running around like crazy, we would get it done just in time for Prabhupada coming out so that he would look and he would keep on going. And then we had to clean the temple inside. Then again at 1 o'clock when the deities were closed, because you get people for darshan at noontime. So then again we'd shut the temple, clean the temple, throw water and run up and down with the squeegees. Then again at night time, 9 o'clock at night, deities were closed. Then again we'd throw water all over the place and run up and down with the squeegees. This was the daily practice. This was Prabhupada's instruction about keeping the temple clean. So you can see the meticulousness with which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers were cleaning the Gundicha temple. Prabhupada also had the same meticulous mentality. Because you'll read in the next few verses how after they cleansed the temple once, then again Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would order them, now do it a second time. Because any straw or dirt, if you throw it out, then, you know, it may blow back in with the wind or whatever, so you have to do it again the second time. And they cleanse the whole place from top to bottom, ceilings, walls, everything. So that was Prabhupada's standard also, that he wanted everything kept very, very clean and pukka. So there were a couple of other things that are seemingly small incidents, but just reflect the state of consciousness that Prabhupada had in terms of, you know, keeping things clean. There was a few incidences with lotus. You know what a lotus is? It's a metal pot that people use for bathing in India. So there are one or two little incidences to do about lotus that, again, showed Prabhupada's state of consciousness. So on January the 13th in 1976, we were in Calcutta. It was a codicil. So Prabhupada took his morning walk along the Ganges. Hundreds of pilgrims were taking a dawn bath there, having come for the Ganga Sagar Mela. So in January, everybody heads down to the mouth of the Ganges there. There's that Ganga Sagara, and they have a big Mela there. So Prabhupada explained that Sagara is the sea, and the Mela is a spiritual gathering on an island on the Ganga's estuary. So evidently, eager pilgrims had traveled from as far away as Rajasthan in the northwest. They camped along the banks of the Ganges, washing their few possessions, as well as themselves, in the holy waters, unmindful of the boats and other river traffic passing by. They sat contentedly on the pathways, cooking breakfast and drying out their clothing. Noting the shining lota that one man was carrying, Prabhupada remarked that even if even the lota is so clean, we can understand how clean he must be personally. So Prabhupada also recalled how he and his mother had bathed in the same spot when he was a child. So he was noting, and he said, this is India's advantage. So even if they're very poor, it doesn't matter. They're always very, very clean. So these people, they had practically only one cloth. They have a gumsha and a dhoti or a sari. So they come, they bathe first thing in the morning at dawn. Even if it's freezing cold, it doesn't matter. They wash their cloth and then hang it out on the fence. Put the gumsha on whilst they're waiting, cook, And then by the time they finished their prasadam, then the cloth was dry, and they put that back on, and away they would go. And that was their daily routine. Every day. Even if you have only one cloth, it must be clean. So Prabhupada said this is India's advantage. So later on, when we'd gone to Mayapur, Prabhupada was keeping his schedule. He was walking up on the roof rather than going around the grounds. So Prabhupada's attentiveness to every detail is nothing short of amazing. As soon as he came up to the cool morning air on the rooftop, he noted that a lota was standing next to the freshly watered tulsi plants. None of us thought anything about it, but vexation immediately crossed Prabhupada's face. He asked one of the devotees to check if there was a lota in the toilet room. So he went and looked. "No, Srila Prabhupada," came the reply. Prabhupada shook his head. He recognized it as the one that he had been using in the toilet. He said, "Just see, aparadi, offender, they have used that lota for watering. Great offender, this is going on. Malechas and yavanas." So the thought of using a contaminated receptacle to water Tulsi Devi was abominable to him, and he warned us to see that it does not happen again in the future. One who has used that, he has no sense how to water the Tulsi plant. He should be instructed, you never use that toilet lota. So again, you know, we tend to think of Tulsi Devi as being a plant. You can use anything just to pour the water. But for Prabhupada, no, she's a pure devotee. And now you're using the same lota that Prabhupada was using for his bathing to water Tulsi Devi. So he couldn't tolerate that. Then there was another comment about lotas. We had gone down to Hyderabad for the temple opening in August the 18th. And usually when we traveled, the local temple would supply some manpower to clean Prabhupada's rooms. And I'd engage them in, you know, they would clean the paraphernalia and the buckets that Prabhupada used for bathing, etc. So I had this silver lota that Prabhupada used for drinking water, and it would sit on his desk. And when we went to Hyderabad, there were very few devotees there, and everybody was flat out getting the preparations for the opening of the temple. So there was nobody available to clean Prabhupada's rooms. So I was doing it myself. So I've been sweeping and cleaning. And in the Hyderabad temple, they had Prabhupada's room. It was kind of on the second floor, and they'd knocked a hole in the wall, and it looked directly down into the temple room. And there was a little, tiny little balcony there, and Mahamsa had this idea that Prabhupada would be able to come out and sit on the balcony and then give darshan to the people that were in the temple room below. But, you know, typically when we got there, most things were not completed. So instead of there being a doorway there, there was just a hole. And he'd hung some curtain there. And, you know, the flooring wasn't finished either. So when I was sweeping, I thought, well, here's the curtain, you know, and then there's this balcony, it's not completed, there's cement dust and stuff. So I just swept all the dirt from the room, and I swept it behind the curtain onto this little balcony. And then, because I was very busy, you know, running around trying to get things done, I had neglected to polish Srila Prabhupada's lota. It was sitting on his desk, and there were a couple of fingerprints on it. But to my eye, you know, it looked okay. It wasn't like bright and shiny exactly, but, you know, I didn't think it was dirty either. And, of course, Prabhupada was the only one that used it, so I'd left that. So then in the morning, Prabhupada rang his buzzer, and he called me, and he said, "What is this?" He said, "You're not cleaning?" He said, "Take it away and clean it." And he'd been looking around his room as well, and he'd looked behind the curtain, and he saw all the dirt behind the curtain. So he said, "Sweep it out." So I had to go around and sweep the whole room up again and polish his lota. So Prabhupada was always on top of things. You know, I'd been with him nearly a year by that time. But still he was finding out all these faults. And actually one time he apologized. He chastised me for another incident, similar incident, you know, not being clean. And then he said, "Don't mind." He said, "It's my duty as your guru." He said, "I have to train you." So there was another incident. We were in Mayapur, and Guru Kripa Maharaj had been, he was sat with Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was behind his desk. He was in front, and they were talking about some managerial things. And I was sat at the back of the room, and it wasn't something, you know, that directly involved me. So I was just kind of sat there. It was my habit to always be in the room, you know, whoever was there, I would always be there in case Prabhupada needed anything. So I was just kind of sat there and spacing out a little bit. So I just playing around, and I put my fingers in my, I had a waistcoat, and I put my fingers in my waistcoat pocket, and I found a toothpick. So I took this toothpick out, and Prabhupada's talking to Guru Kripa, and I'm sat there, and I'm poking my teeth. And as he's talking, again, Prabhupada's talking to Guru Kripa, and he's got one eye on me. So then he looked at me, and he stopped. He said, "What is this?" He said, "I'm talking, and you're not listening." He said, "Pay attention." He said, "This is not just for him. This is for you also." Although it was a managerial matter that, you know, Guru Kripa was involved in, the point was that Prabhupada was giving instructions, and that was for everybody. So he said, "This is for you also." And he said, "And go and wash your hands." He said, "You're always playing around with the mouth, the nose, the fingers." He said, "Go and wash your hands." I'd just been poking around with the toothpick, but I, you know, go and wash. So again, I came in afterwards and I apologized. Prabhupada laughed. He said, "You'll never learn." He said, "Anyway, keep trying." So there's a few things there. Then how long can we go on for? All right. A few other pastimes. Cleanliness and prasadam. Because prasadam is always an area where it's very easy, you know, to be careless and dirty about. And there was a few incidences. In December of 76, Prabhupada had gone down to Hyderabad. This was a second visit. And we were staying at the farm there. And Prabhupada had just inaugurated that farm program. He'd gone down and he stayed for about a week and a half. And he wanted to start the Varnashram program there on this 600-acre property that we had. So there weren't too many facilities there. Just a few simple brick, like a line of brick cottages. And then Mahamsa had built one small house for Srila Prabhupada that wasn't ready actually when we got there, but was made ready after about a week. So Prabhupada was going out on morning walks and looking over the property. And then when we came back, on the outside there was a big banyan tree. And around that tree there was like a concrete seat, very wide, all around. So the devotees had been putting out Prabhupada's Vyasasan on this concrete platform. And then we would have Guru Puja, and then Prabhupada would give his class, and then he would go into his rooms. So that was being done a few times. And then, as soon as we got there, Prabhupada wanted to start a preaching program. So his idea was, with this farm, that we had so much acreage, and he was going to construct several small villages, or like clumps of housing, maybe a dozen houses in different parts of the property. And he wanted the devotees to go out and preach in the local villages, and then attract the villagers to come and take up a Krishna conscious way of life, and invite them to come and live on our land, provide them with a house, give them some land, you know, 1 acre or whatever, and have these little villages around the land with all the people living there, and have small temples in each place. And then the idea was that they would just continue on doing their agricultural activities, but they'd do it with a Krishna conscious background. You know, they get up and follow the program in the morning and learn from the devotees. So it was a nice idea. So we had to start preaching in the local area. So Hazarduda was there with his bus party. I think about a dozen German devotees. And Tejas, he had also come down. He had been in Delhi as the temple president. Then, when he heard this Hyderabad farm was beginning, he'd asked Srila Prabhupada if he should go down there because he could speak Telugu. He had been in the Peace Corps before becoming a devotee, and his assignment was South India. And he had been in charge of about 10 villages, training the villages in crop rotation and all this kind of stuff. So he actually learnt the language. He was fluent in it. So he came down with us. And of course, Mahamsa Swami was also there. So Prabhupada had this devised this program that they should go out in the day and do kirtan in the villages and then advertise that we're having a pandal program on our land in the evening. So invite them to come for 7 o'clock. So the first day, then people came, and there was a very simple thing, like a small stage and something like this kind of structure above it. And then devotees would go out and they would chant. And then afterwards, then there was to be prasadam distribution. So we had the first day, and a couple of hundred villagers came. So it was nice. Prabhupada liked it. Then the next day, not so many people came. And rather than Prabhupada go out and speak, he was having Tejas do it. So let's see where I can pick up here. During the day, Prabhupada dictated a short speech to Tejas for him to translate into Telugu, which would be read out tonight to the visitors. So what Prabhupada told him is that everyone is thinking that to accept the existence of God is optional, but it is not optional. It is nature's way. Either you go back to Godhead or you stay and suffer in the cycle of birth and death and rot in this material world. So that was the essence of Prabhupada's little speech. Tejas had to say it. So in the evening, as it turned out, the program didn't go too well. Only about half the number of people came, and the kirtan was very poor and unorganized. Tejas gave his talk in Telugu, and then afterwards the prasadam was served. So Prabhupada was sitting in his room, in his house. So he decided that he would like to try the prasadam, although he never eats so late in the evening. So I had some brought to his room for him. So it was just a large lump of rice. And as soon as it touched his lips, he spat it out. "This is poison," he said angrily. And he demanded to know who had cooked it. So I went and I looked around and then came and reported to him what I had seen. I'd seen that large numbers of our guests were simply standing around and nobody would touch the prasadam. And in fact, most of them had thrown it on the ground. They'd been given a leaf plate and then these kind of claggy, gluey lumps of rice. And people couldn't eat it, so they'd thrown it on the ground. It was so inedible that I told him that I saw that even the dogs were refusing to eat it. I'd actually saw a dog was sniffing and then it walked away in disgust, So I went around to the side of the main building where the open fires were, where the food was being cooked. So I saw a fellow there with a beedi in his mouth, a cigarette, standing over the pots, tending to the fires. He was the head cook. He was also a sweeper, the same man who was cleaning the grounds in the morning. So, of course, in India, the sweepers, they do the toilets and the grounds and everything. They're not allowed to do anything else. So I saw the same man that had been cleaning in the morning. Now he was the cook. And he was there with a cigarette in his mouth. And I noticed that in the big pots, the top portion had been skimmed off. I made some inquiries. And what he'd done was he had his family there. So after he cooked the rice, he skimmed off the top bit, which was nice and, separated. And kept that aside for himself and his wife. Then they'd sent, something for the offering to Gornatai, and then the rest was distributed to the visitors. And it was just this horrible, claggy, gloppy lumps of stuff that nobody could touch. So this man had apparently been engaged by Mahamsa Swami to do the cooking. So he had skimmed off the top layer of the rice for himself and his family before sending it to be offered to the deities, and then he had distributed it to the villagers. I tried to find Mahamsa, but nobody knew where he was. It seemed that he had gone back into the city temple. So Prabhupada was absolutely furious. He called in Jagadish, Hasaduta, and Tejas. Jagadish was the secretary. And he demanded to know who was responsible for the bad program. He told them, "The poison which is not fit for the dogs to eat, we are giving to human beings. We are trying to attract them to come and live here with us, but once having come, they will never come again. They are coming for the tongue, not for hearing your sweet voice. If they want to hear some sweet voice, they can listen to some woman. So your kirtan will not attract them. They are coming for the prasadam, and you are giving them poison cooked by a sweeper. Materially it is impossible to eat, and spiritually it has no value." So after berating them for a half an hour, he sent them out. It was already late, and Mahamsa had still not turned up. Eventually he arrived, but it was after 10 p.m. So Prabhupada said that he would see him in the morning. So then in the morning, which happened to also be the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Prabhupada was sat in his room and he called Mahamsa in. So early in the morning at 6 a.m., Prabhupada called Mahamsa in along with the other senior men. And he preached to him that things must be organized in a proper fashion, otherwise it would be a failure. He told him, "I'm not prepared to invest anything here if things continue as they are. You must make immediate plans for irrigation and vegetable and sugarcane crops." And then he took up last night's disaster. And he told him, "No one will come here because we are allowing a sweeper to cook." He told him very gravely. By this time, his anger had abated. But, he wasn't shouting anymore as he had the night before. But he told him very gravely, "It has shocked my heart that you have allowed a sweeper to cook and then offer such things to Krishna. We say that you must be second initiated, but you are allowing a sweeper to cook. This means that after 7 years, you are still a Malacha." Mahamsa, he was actually Indian, but he was from a Parsi family. The Parsis are non-Vedic, non-Hindu. "We are saying, Radhikara Paka Anna Vivija Bhyanjana. Radhika and her gopi friends are personally cooking and making such nice arrangements for giving very palatable foodstuffs simply for pleasing Krishna. And you are offering things cooked by a sweeper." Mahamsa had little to say. He offered some excuse that he had been unable to find a good cook. And because this other fellow was reliable, he had therefore asked him to be responsible to see that the prasadam was cooked. But he was not defensive. He admitted his mistake and he promised to rectify it. Prabhupada also commented about the dismal Pandal program. He told them, "You're all dead men. Dead men cannot preach. Whatever preaching there is will all be finished. The first principle of preaching is utsahan, enthusiasm. So without this enthusiasm, nothing will go on." Then he dropped the whole thing and changed the subject. Is that time? All right. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jagannatha Swami ki jai. Gaura Premananda. Was that all right?
Thank you.
This
so
is
we have an initiation this morning.
All right. Okay.
It's really, really, really amazing.
Thank you.
So sweet. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Balaji.
Thank you very much.